What's happening, everybody? This is the QBList podcast. Brian and Nick coming back at you. Dust off your mics, folks. Here we are. It's free agency time. It's 2025 NFL season. Kind of kicking off. Not quite, but good enough for us, man. How are we doing today?
Dude, stoked to be back. Happy to see you in person. Recording from the mountains of Colorado. I had a couple moose come and visit me this morning. Felt like a good sign to get back in the swing of things here. So yeah, happy to be back.
It sounds like we barely made it, both of us. You know, you've got the moose attacking you there, and I got a few squirrels in my backyard that were, you know, kind of eyeballing me a little bit. But we made it, folks. We're here to talk some free agency, really everything from the Super Bowl. So if you haven't been paying attention, you needed that break, we're here to break it all down for you, go in through, well, all the nitty-gritty, whether it be coaches, signings, trades. I mean, we got quite a bit to work through here, man.
Yeah, we'll try to go as quickly as possible, but there's so much information, and this is the most exciting time of the year, which is, you know, you and I are collaborating all the time and we're doing startup drafts right now. But this is really where you can get an edge on other players. Some of the guys who we brought up last year ended up being pretty good hits and pretty good values as well. So if you're here, then count this as a time to get ahead of the rest of your league mates and maybe a little dynasty information as well.
Absolutely. We should be coming for a weekly dose of football, whether we be catching up with just the news going on, diving into this rookie class as we get closer to the NFL draft, and just really everything that you should be paying attention to really get ready for your fantasy drafts and, you know, what should be just a few weeks, months, something like that, right?
It's months. It'll feel like years.
Yeah, I'm already pumped. I can't believe we're just a mere month away from the draft. It seemed like just not too long ago we were finishing up watching the Eagles just absolutely romp the Chiefs in that Super Bowl win.
Yeah, but I'm thankful everything moved so quickly. My girlfriend was like, okay, we get a little break from fantasy football now. This is good. And I was like, sure. Yeah,
sure.
Maybe.
Yeah. We got Combine 2 weeks away, but sure. Those 2 weeks will fly by.
Yeah, we need to catch up on that. You got to your first Combine this year.
That was a great time. Got a media pass, got to go hang out there, do some interviews, get to be right up front for the Combine event. So definitely a great time. I feel like I got some insight and stuff I can't wait to drop over the next few months as we talk about these rookies.
Yeah, and some hints about the Colts and Lucas Oil.
I sure hope so. I was looking for the GM as a Colts fan here. I wanted to go give him a few words, a piece of my mind, but he lucked out. I couldn't get past the red tape there. But speaking of GMs, let's move on to coaches, actually, because we have several that moved around. We have seven new head coaches that we need to talk about. And I mean, we got to go with the cream of the crop. The one that was the most exciting, the biggest signing that there was, Ben Johnson, the OC from the Lions. After being a head coach candidate last year, he finally got to move over to the Bears, hanging out with Caleb Williams and company. Give me your first thoughts on this coaching signing.
Well, this one was, it felt like it was 2 years in the making. I feel like you and I have been talking about that for a long time. Ben Johnson's been at the top of people's lists for several years now. And I, for one, really admired that he stuck around in Detroit, wanted to make something of the team, wanted to ride out that winning streak. Unfortunate the way it ended last season, but I always felt like this was going to be the best fit. A little weird that it's in division, a little uncomfortable for them, I'm sure, but walking in with a number one pick at QB with all this elite skill player and talent around him. And honestly, a defense that underperformed last year too. These situations don't really open up that much. And he waited for the right time and came in, I think, at the appropriate time. I don't think a better opportunity is going to be out there for him.
This was definitely at the top of my list. I thought the Bears and the Jags were probably the best situation for him to go to. As an offensive-minded coach, like, why wouldn't you go to a team with an established quarterback? But this team, like, all they were missing was a head coach. You know, for whatever reason, they rode Eberflus into the rookie year of Caleb Williams. But the offensive line is a glaring issue they needed to address. The defense was pretty good, as you said, underperformed. But, you know, we've got two pretty good wide receiver pieces here. You know, a young one in Odunze. DJ Moore's no, you know, he's no rookie, that's for sure. But, Cole Kmet. There you go. We got the tight end there for the Bears. But really, all we needed to fix was the offense. And that's exactly what he went to go do. Shortly after the Super Bowl, the Bears made a couple of trades for offensive guards, and we'll kind of jump into the free agency splashes with what they did. Is they got the top center off the board, so three big offensive pieces added to that line there. What do you think that does for this this fantasy future?
Yeah, wasting no time coming in there. I think Ben Johnson knows he's got a quarterback on a rookie contract, and he's got money to spend elsewhere. So the first thing you do is come in. He's coming from the Lions scheme where they won in the trenches. They absolutely dominated people with their offensive line and defensive line. And he right away came in, brought in a couple veterans, people he's used before, and he's going to protect his assets. The run game should be improved. Caleb should be in a much better situation to succeed this year. Hopefully that applies to DJ Moore, Roma Dunze, all these guys we want to see big seasons from too. But yeah, I think all under the radar moves to the average fantasy player, but huge moves when it comes down to like the nitty gritty of football and fantasy.
I think it'll really put to bed the conversation of is Caleb Williams overrated or not. I think he is absolutely set up for success. This is one of those situations where we're going to find out how truly good he is and how good is Ben Johnson. You know, is he able to actually live up to the hype that was in Detroit?
Totally. There's no more excuses for either of them. Ben Johnson waited for the best opportunity possible. Caleb walked into a situation that no number one pick gets to walk into as well. That's not what Trevor walked into. Jaden Daniels, Drake May, even those guys walked into much worse situations than what Caleb had. So this is kind of prove it time. Make or break. I do expect big things from this offense, at least for fantasy. And hopefully they can turn it around for Chicago fans, because I'm sure you've got a similar feeling as a Colt fan, but they've been waiting to see some success for a bit.
Shot number two, folks, if you're keeping count. We'll see how what we get to by the end of this episode.
We have pick number four, so I really can't say too much.
Oh, the Patriots. All right, so the Bears are probably the most exciting sighting for the head coach. Let's dip down here a little bit. Let's go to the Cowboys. Let's talk some Brian Schottenheimer, the OC from the previous years, promoted to the head coach. Looks like McCarthy couldn't come home with a deal with Jerry Jones, so he's going to sit home. He's going to take another year to recoup, and he's going to hit the open market next year as a head coaching candidate. But Brian Schottenheimer, always the bridesmaid, never the bride kind of a thing. He bounced around as an OC forever. Famously, I feel like Seattle's where most people would probably know his work. Let go because of differences there. Just never quite got it figured out there with Pete Carroll. But thoughts here with the Schottenheimer hire
was the most Cowboys hire that you could ever anticipate. That whole thing with McCarthy was so dramatic. It was delayed way longer than it needed to be. By the time the situation unfolded, the top coaches were not even available anymore. It kind of seemed like the writing was on the wall. Not the worst hiring, but Jerry Jones likes to keep people in house. It's kind of just a boring hire in the end, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was a one or two and done and try to get somebody else in there. But Jerry Jones kind of likes his puppets, and he wants the final say at the end of the day, which is why a Bill Belichick or somebody who wants more control over the organization will never end up there, and somebody like Jason Garrett can just be like toyed with. And yeah.
That's what a lot of this seems like. A guy that has been in the, you know, he knows systems. He's been in there, been in the NFL a long time. But yeah, exactly. Somebody that will listen to Jerry Jones when, you know, he starts yammering on his nonsense. Schottenheimer, granted, he likes to run the ball. He's efficient when throwing the ball. So I don't think this is fear of Dak or Lamb. If anything, I think, like you said, this is not a sexy hire by all any means. We might get some discounts on some Cowboy players. And I mean, we've got talk of possibly Jeanty going there in the first round. Possibly do we get Tet to go there to pair up with Lamb? Exciting pieces for sure. But I think this offense, granted, it's not going to be a fun one to grab, but I think we can get lower ADPs on these players where we might have some fun drafting them.
Absolutely.
Let's head to Jacksonville. Talk about drama with head coaching hires here. Jacksonville definitely had it when bringing in the OC from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Liam Cohen. I know you've all seen the awkward Duval comment that he made going out there. Just a little cringy. He's a little awkward guy. But you know what? He had a great offense. He took over the 1 year after the previous OC left to go to Carolina. So Liam Cohen, he's got himself a quarterback in Trevor Lawrence. He has probably one of the best wide receivers in the league right now with Brian Thomas Jr. going into his second year. Extremely excited for that. Thoughts on this hire?
I like the hire overall. I'm glad they got rid of Bulky. After that, probably should have been well before it. Then all this drama could have been avoided. I think it's a good thing for Trevor. I'm curious to see what the rest of the offense does. I know they just got rid of Evan Engram. They got rid of Christian Kirk. Maybe Brenton Strange pops up into that, but they're going to need some more pieces to put around Trevor with this rebuild. And yeah, I think it's a good thing overall. Offensive minded coach. He's been with McVay. He's been with Baker. He's had some success in college and pro. So hopefully we'll get to see the Trevor Lawrence that we've all kind of been waiting on.
And does he feed Trevor Etienne? Do you know, do we get to see a rejuvenated season from Etienne with all the work that we got to see with the wide or the running backs down there in Tampa? Who knows? Is it going to be him and Bigsby going at it head to head, or are both guys just going to be replaced in this draft possibly?
Just the draft for it.
Next up, so we had the OC Ben Johnson from the Lions get snatched up. We saw the defensive coordinator get snatched up as well. Aaron Glenn goes to New York, heads to the Jets, enters the drama that will ensue there. I feel bad for the guy. Like, he's another defensive coordinator that's going to go to the Jets. I think it's like six of the last seven head coaches for the Jets have been defensive guys. It just doesn't work. So Aaron Rodgers is out of town. Devontae Adams will dive into here in a minute with that trade. But what are your thoughts here with this hire?
Yeah, it seems like he is very much a player's coach. Everybody, everything I've read about him seems like all the players want to play for him. They love him. He's a culture hire. He's going to rebuild this whole thing, similar to all the things I said about Robert Saleh when they brought him in as well, but maybe less of the like hard-headed mentality. But rough offseason for the Lions. They've never had to deal with their offense and defensive coordinators getting stolen away every single season, but these are kind of the repercussions that you have to deal with when you actually become a good team. And I'm curious to see Dan Campbell fight through that. But I hope Aaron Glenn does well in this situation. It seems like he's a pretty good person to root for.
I'm rooting for the success of the team for him, for the Jets fans, because it's been bad, been toxic, but they got rid of, hopefully they got Aaron Rodgers out of the building. There's still speculations he might make it back up to New York on the other side of the field. All righty, here we go. Now we get to poke some fun here, folks. We think the Colts are bad. Let's talk about somebody else's favorite team. Let's talk about the Patriots, the team that hasn't done very well since their golden child left. Mike Vrabel, though, a ex-player of the Patriots, took the year off from the Tennessee Titans head coach spot, popped back here with his old team. I mean, tell us here, are we truly excited about this, or is this another players coach coming in here that might just razzle dazzle his way to 10 wins?
I mean, I would love 10 wins at this point, but I am truly excited about this. I felt like this was the hire last year. I didn't understand why Vrabel was allowed to sit out the year and why nobody had interest with 7 or 8 coaching changes. I think with the Titans, we saw him consistently have a mediocre roster and bring them deep into the playoffs. Ryan Tannehill was a QB1 with very little to throw to. I'm very excited about this. Obviously, he's a longtime Patriot as well, so he fits the culture, fits everything that they're trying to build there. The little things that go with it, people are hyped up about Drake May, as they should be.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Mike McDaniels or Josh McDaniels.
I was going to bring him up. Yeah, Josh
McDaniels. Well, you said little thing, so I thought maybe that's what you were insinuating.
That's exactly what I'm saying. As bad as he's been everywhere else, he has been only a good offensive coordinator with the Patriots. And yeah, he had Brady for extensive periods of that, but he also made Mac Jones look like a star in their first season before he ended up moving on again.
And Matt Carroll too. Is that who it was?
Castle,
Matt Castle. There you go.
Yeah. Matt Castle as well. Stepping in when Brady went down. So, I can't remember if it was the same year as Garoppolo, but that year they were 4-0 to start the season with no Brady too. And Thomas Brown coming in as the passing game coordinator. He was the Bears interim head coach, interim offensive coordinator, interim head coach. He was the one who kind of made Caleb look good for a few of those games midseason as he stepped up and they fired everyone on their offensive staff. But focusing solely on the passing game here, I like that hire as well. So, yeah, I'm excited about it, but they still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, unfortunately, we didn't get a lot of big wide receivers hitting free agency, so the Patriots missed out. But
or tackles.
Yeah, or tackles. Yeah. But if anybody can make a room full of wide receiver threes viable, it is Josh McDaniels. So interested to see what he can do with Drake May, a quarterback that's pretty decent and also has some wheels. So I'm excited to see. I mean, he had Tim Tebow, didn't he? Didn't he have there Tim Tebow with the
I almost Denver. Brought it up. There was a stretch where Tebow looked good, too. And then there was a stretch where he looked horrible.
Oh, goodness. This was probably one of my favorite hires as far as, like, talk about, like, a culture change here. Let's go to Vegas. Let's talk about the Raiders bringing in Pete Carroll. Yes, the oldest head coach in the NFL back when he was a few years ago, and he still is now that he's back. This is what you do to fix it. I wanted him to go to the Jets. I don't know if Pete Carroll is going to immediately fix anything or change anything, but as far as just fixing the culture, that is 100% what Pete Carroll is going to come in here and do.
Yeah, oldest, but seemingly the youngest at heart, the way he's running around on the sideline and bent over, chewing gum as loudly as he can. I'm curious to see this. I think it's a great hire, though. Tom Brady coming in with the Raiders there. I don't think they wanted to go through a long rebuild. I think they wanted somebody to implement a culture right away and try to start winning in the short term and the long term. But I do really like this hire.
And then the last one we had to wait for the Super Bowl to end, but the Saints brought in Kellen Moore. Unless he got like some big guarantees for at least 3 years, I feel like the kid's set up for failure. You know, he's going to tack on 30, maybe 40% winning record as a head coach, and he'll be fired after year three because they've got Derek Carr inevitably this year. Maybe they get a rookie next year and the year after, but like they continue to kick the can down the road as far as the cap space. So I don't know how they keep signing people. I just don't get it.
Yeah, and they've been out spending money this offseason too. I personally wish that he would have waited a little bit longer. I feel like he's been pretty patient and kind of passed around the league despite pretty much consistently having top five offenses, whether it was Dallas, the Chargers, or this year with the Eagles, and really running completely different offenses dependent on the skill set of the players that he had around him. But I didn't feel like this is a good situation. They have shown that they do not manage their money well. They don't draft especially well.
They're old.
They're old. If I was him, I would want that guaranteed minimum 3 years to rebuild this thing as they continue to just re-sign Alvin Kamara to like 3 year contracts and not have any idea of like what a Super Bowl window actually looks like.
Yeah, their only good future piece is Chris Olave, and like the guy can't stay out of the hospital because Derek Carr keeps dropping him in there with those passes. So it's not great for the Saints. Alrighty, folks. So that will cover up the coaching changes. We are going to now start working through the transactions of free agency. And you know what? Free agency is so exciting. You know, we got the 2-day tampering period beforehand, before it officially starts. You know what? The days leading up to it, I think that was so much more exciting before we actually hit free agency. So we're going to start from the top, work our way all the way through the bottom, catch as much as we can. But here we go. Khalil Shakir, wide receiver for the Bills, started off with a 4-year, $60 million extension. The Bills continue to collect their wide receiver threes for Josh Allen. I guess is my thoughts on it.
Yeah, Josh Allen also signed to a huge extension. So in terms of fantasy, this is probably the best situation that Shakir could tie himself to for the next 4 years. He led the Bills in targets this year by a wide margin, probably more of a consistent wide receiver three at best, but great for PPR purposes. He averaged almost 7 targets a game. I'm not going to be ever high in touchdowns, but he really seems to have established himself as the safety valve for Josh Allen in what I think a lot of us expected Dalton Kincaid to be this year. So if you have him, congratulations. Not a terrible buy if somebody's willing to trade him for a third or something like that. But yeah, great payday for someone who I believe was drafted in the 5th round and had a lot of doubt coming around him from the dynasty and fantasy community in general.
Right, the money handed to wide receivers this year is wild. The Commanders looking to build this team around Jaden Daniels, supplying him with more weapons. They traded a 5th-round pick for Deebo Samuels. I mean, I'm excited for Jaden Daniels, what Deebo does for him, but like, I don't know if I'm actually excited for Deebo next year. Like, top 40 wide receiver, maybe, but I don't know if I can confidently say, like, I look at him as like a top 30 play next year.
Oh, that's fair. His ADP right now is wide receiver 36 on Underdog in best ball leagues. I am actually pretty comfortable with that. I'm not expecting another top 10 finish, but in terms of his skill set, I think this is probably the best landing spot he could have had, with Kingsbury running a pretty fast-paced offense. He'll probably be used in screens across the middle. He'll probably get some carries. There'll be reverses, similar to how he was used in San Francisco. I think this is probably the best situation he could have gotten. And it's cool to see the Commanders in a win now, Super Bowl or bust mindset, which has been a long time since I think we've seen that.
Hey, you get the owner swapped out, you get a better one in there. Good things seem to happen.
Yeah, well overdue.
Geno has been traded to the Raiders. He is leaving the Seahawks, going to the Raiders for a third-round pick. I mean, you had to kind of see something like this happening. Like we said, Pete Carroll is the oldest coach. He's not going to take the long time to draft his rookie and work all the way through there. It looks like they're one of his, they want to take advantage of a maybe not a Super Bowl win now window, but they extended Max Crosby. You know, they expect to win some games and compete for the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm happy for Geno. It sounds like the Seahawks offered him a very similar deal to what they ended up with Sam Darnold. But they were able to get him for a third. I don't see them spending a third and not extending him. So whether or not they do draft someone, I think an extension for the next year or two is probably going to be in order for Geno. Never going to be elite, but kind of been a QB 13, 19, and 5 over the past 3 years. So a little bit underrated in terms of dynasty and QB 2 leagues, but a little bit of a downgrade here as well. Bowers and Jacoby Myers. Bowers is amazing, of course, but it's no DK, Lockett, and JSN. So maybe we do see him kind of more in that middle range of the QB 2.
I think he'll have streamability, you know, definitely not full on drafting the guy, but yeah, I think I'll
have to keep changing my mindset because we're playing a lot of super flex leagues. So I'm like, Geno has great value, but yeah, in one QB leagues, probably not going to impact too much, but it's a good thing for Bowers. It can only be a positive for him to have an upgrade at QB.
For the Chiefs, well, for whatever reason, their new rookies cannot stay out of Texas and stay out of trouble. Xavier Worthy was arrested not too long ago. Looks like the charges won't really come of anything. No suspensions or anything like that. But good Lord, Chiefs, keep your boys out of Texas. Like, no good is coming from them going back there. To fix that, though, they rectified it. Don't worry, folks. They've got a backup plan. Juju and Hollywood have both been extended by the Chiefs for a one-year deal. Aaron Jones. Let's talk about that. Aaron Jones, two-year, $20 million to come back with the Vikings. That's something to talk about here because they also traded for Jordan Mason with a sixth-round pick, fifth-round pick, I believe. So what is there to think about with this running back room for the Vikings?
I'm pumped for Aaron Jones. I've always been an Aaron Jones fan. He signed a one-year, $7 million contract last year, so he's getting a raise and an extension here. He, I think, exceeded everyone's expectations and stayed pretty healthy, but he had 1,500 yards last season, seven touchdowns to go along with that, and he's entering age 31, so he's part of that group that's defying the running back age cliff that we've all talked about for years, but these are the league winners last year, were all of these guys who were above 30 years old, essentially, but he still looks explosive to me, pretty dynamic as a passer, as a pass catcher and a rusher. And I think the Jordan Mason move will push him a little bit more towards the pass catching role. And I think they'll want to take a little bit off his plate. And if anything, it just pushes Ty Chandler once again off the radar for any sort of future here. But dynasty-wise, I think he's a good little contender buy because he's valued right now as like a late second. And I think what this tells me is the Vikings are probably not going to spend any capital on this on a running back in this class because they only have four picks and they just locked him up for two more years. They've got McCarthy on the rookie contract. Jordan Mason is in for 2 years. I think they recognize that they're also in a win now mode with that rookie contract, and another running back at this point isn't the most logical thing. It's not impossible, but I think he's with a lot of uncertainty when you're making trades right now, I think he feels relatively safe to be the number one guy there for the next year or two.
Definitely this next year for sure. Yeah, like you said, they've only got a few picks. They do have a first round pick and not another thing until the fifth round. So seeing them trade down, could them open that window to maybe getting a rookie running back? But no, like you said, multi-year deal for both these guys. I think it's a nice 1-2 punch that they would have. So I'm excited. And Aaron Jones, RB27 in underdog right now. I imagine he's either going to stay there, or move down just a little bit, you know, with, you know, just kind of see Jordan Mason and Aaron Jones kind of meet a little bit ADP. So might have some pretty good value with that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of old guys getting promotions and getting paydays, I mean, when Saquon Barkley goes out there, breaks 2,000 rushing yards, and then walks you to the Super Bowl so your quarterback can just, you know, put the icing on the cake, it's time for an extension. So Saquon Barkley gets a 2-year, $41 million extension. This guy was making barely more than he should have been, and this definitely pushes him over the top. The Eagles proving, though, that the franchise knows what they're doing. They're treating their guys as they should.
Yeah, their front office has done a fantastic job over the last few years, keeping them not only in contention, losing lots of big players, bringing in big names, kind of going against the grain with what they're known for doing. And they're not known for ever paying a running back, but finding one that fits their scheme and is just an absolute elite talent. Happy for Saquon. He's another player who's well documented from his time in high school and college as just a good dude who's easy to root for. There's footage of him this year where I forget what the record was, but there was something that they were Sirianni checked with him on the sideline and said, "Do you want this?" And he's like, "No, let the younger guys play. You know, he doesn't care. He's a true teammate." And nice to see him get rewarded as a running back after all those years just getting stonewalled in the backfield behind that Giants line. So I'm not an Eagles fan whatsoever, but I'm very happy for Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, Evan Engram and Saquon Barkley both know what it's like to excel when you leave the New York Giants, because both of the first year they were out of there. Yeah, it's amazing what the Eagles have done. This is a team that turned down Justin Jefferson for Jalen Reagor, and yet you still call him probably the best GM over the last decade. A guy who made a mistake like that is regarded as the best GM. It's awesome.
That is pretty cool. It shows you how much we know in Dynasty, too. Like, if this guy is making that error, then we're bound to make those mistakes as well.
And I think it just goes to show you, like, make the move. Don't be afraid to make the move, because you won't ever win not making the move. You could make the wrong one, but as long as you continue to make the moves, you do more right than wrong. It all works out. And, yeah, they just hosted their second Super Bowl in the last 10 years. Let's talk about some more fun, because the trades started happening here. We talked about the Jets losing Devontae Adams. Well, how'd they lose him? Well, they traded him to the – no, they cut him. Cut him and he went to the Rams, or did they trade him, go to the Rams?
They released him.
They released him. Yes, sorry here, folks. Got the – our we had to get rid of a producer. He put traded in the notes. He's gone. Don't worry. Won't happen again. But, yes, was released, picked up by the Rams, signed a 2-year, $46 million extension. Cooper Kupp is gone, so now we're looking at a tandem of Puka Nacua and Devontae Adams. Matthew Stafford, I mean, there's a cap because the guy doesn't run, but certainly exciting to see someone who is going nearly as a QB3 in best ball right now.
Yeah, love this fit for Stafford. Love it for Devontae as well. This is a team that was one or two plays away from beating the Eagles and, you know, maybe going to the Super Bowl there too. And they're pretty young defensively. This replacement for Cooper Kupp is probably a little heartfelt for Rams fans, but Adams is still a monster. And he showed it the second half of the season in New York with Aaron Rodgers. So pairing him up with Puka, this is going to be a pretty impressive offense, and I think a lot of fantasy assets to go around.
Does it scare you off of Puka having Devontae Adams there? Like, do you still see Puka as a top six wide receiver? And can you see a world where we get both of these guys in the top 12, top 14?
Dynasty, for sure. He's still up there for me. We'll have to kind of revisit it for this season as it comes in, but McVay offenses have had two top 24 receivers in five of the last eight seasons. I saw that note today, and that is pretty consistent. You know, this has a lot of feelings towards the Allen Robinson signing a few years ago, whereas like that older wide receiver two coming in. But I think Devontae, you know, Allen Robinson, there was already a notion of, has he lost it? Where Devontae, there is no doubt that he is still creating separation. He is still catching basically anything thrown his way. Stafford is equally as accurate as Aaron Rodgers is, and maybe even, hard to say, better fit. But, you know, I think he's a very, I think they're a perfect pairing together. It doesn't scare me off Puka. I still would have Puka above Adams, but I think both of them are going to eat in this offense next year.
I think so too. Their target share between the two of them is going to be absolutely massive. I can see both of them being over 25%. Mm-hmm. All right. And then we had one more big trade happen right before free agency, before the word broke. DK Metcalf heading out of Seattle. Geno's gone. Now DK's gone. He is headed to Pittsburgh and also signed a five-year, $150 million extension. He was traded for a second-round pick. This just does not scream Pittsburgh to me. A DK Metcalf, 27-year-old, five-year extension for Pittsburgh. It just, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like a Pittsburgh move for me, especially putting him with another pouty receiver in George Pickens.
Yeah, and no quarterback at the for the moment, at least. But I have seen multiple reports that first number came out was off, and it's now 4 years, 132. I'm not sure exactly which one is right, but I've kind of seen it both ways. But yeah, there was a lot of hype that he might go to the Chargers or Green Bay showed interest, and I was pumped to see those guys get their wide receiver one. This one is definitely less exciting, very unlike the Steelers, but they've been trying to get another receiver in there for the past few years, really. I know they were on the verge of getting Christian Kirk to try and make a playoff run there, but I think they just got fed up and they were like, we need a top guy. And it's kind of tough to say what will happen with Pickens, and they kind of have a similar skill set in some ways, but maybe they're assuming Pickens won't be there for the long run and they're going to draft somebody else. They do have a good history of drafting receivers there, but yeah, I don't know. For if Russell's the quarterback and he just wants to throw moon balls all day, then DK and Pickens might be a nice little combo to have, but definitely less exciting than Devontae.
So I guess that's the question. At the time of this recording, Pittsburgh they signed Mason Rudolph to a 2-year, $8 million contract. So he is the quarterback. Guys that we see out there, Russell Wilson, of course, is still out there, and Rodgers is contemplating a team or a rookie. Maybe they move up or Jackson Dart falls to where they're at. But no matter what is the upside, let's say the best of those three goes there, how high are you willing to take? Like, I don't see a world where both of these guys are consistently giving you top 30 plays, like in an Arthur Smith offense.
No, I don't either. I'm at the moment, I have more of a fade mentality towards both of them. And I'm just a little bit nervous that Pickens is just too much of a hothead to stay on the field. And he's already talking about a hold-in if he doesn't get a contract. DK certainly has those same issues, a little bit lesser extent, I would say. But I don't know. As a wide receiver three, I'd be comfortable with it. But I'm not probably drafting him to get into the top 15 or maybe even the top 20.
Yeah, it's going to be a little rich for me. I mean, with the fact of these two players being very similar, Pittsburgh often trading their wide receivers before they sign them to a contract. You know, maybe we do see Pickens on a contract year get shipped out of there because they do have his replacement. But I just don't know where I could see him go that I would be truly excited to, you know, to draft him and feel comfortable with it, because he's not going to go to a team and be a number one anywhere. So then you're asking him to perform as a, you know, high-end number two, and just how many of all those offenses that are out there ready for that.
And from a football perspective, that might be where he's best fit. And I think he's been asked to be a wide receiver one from almost the day he stepped on the field. And for an NFL team, maybe as a wide receiver two, that's going to be perfect. I think for fantasy, we need to lower our expectations. And I felt that way going into last year too, but he's going to have blow-up games. He's going to have 10 highlight reel catches throughout the season. And, you know, the hype will get there. But the consistency, I just don't ever see it being there for maybe for either of them.
A quarterback we didn't bring up that is still in the market that I could see. But I think DK and Pickens could both be top 12
Jameis
wide receivers. If Jameis Winston goes to Pittsburgh and plays the full season, I could see both of those guys being top 12 options.
For sure. Jameis has made everyone. Cedric Tillman, Jerick Jeudy last year, Njoku, like all these guys are, anyone with Jameis, he is just throwing it downfield. He doesn't care at all. I don't really see Jameis personality mixing with Mike Tomlin, but I did have that thought as well, where I was like, oh, you know, they need a bridge. But these seem to be moves. They're in the playoffs essentially every year. I think they want to win a Super Bowl, but they have just missed on quarterbacks for the past like 4 years. And they keep taking this mentality that they don't need one to make it past the wild card round. And I think finally they have to take a look at themselves in the mirror and be like, Tomlin is bringing us over 500 every year, but we aren't giving him an actual star to work with. We're just trading for whoever's being paid by another team. You know, anyone who's getting paid $100 million to not play for their team is not going to bring you to a Super Bowl. Yeah, it's cheap and convenient for you, but that's, if they're getting paid that much to not play, then they're not going to take you there, at least not at this point in their career.
Yeah, if the Steelers just look over in Indianapolis, they can see their future in 3 years. They need to do something different now. Somebody who's not doing anything different now, it's Chris Godwin on the eve of the tampering period, re-signs 3 years, $66 million, going back to Tampa Bay. I mean, there's nothing really new to talk about here with the situation. I think Baker could still be looked at as a top 12 quarterback this year. I'm really excited for Godwin, and Mike Evans could continue to be a value in drafts.
Yep. Just running it back. Not too much to cover there. He'll be healthy, I believe, by the time the season comes back around. So probably going to be a value again.
Yeah, just an ankle issue this time, not an ACL that we're looking for a one-year, you know, hampered year or anything like that. Should be bouncing right back. Somebody who's not going right back is Sam Darnold. The Vikings, I guess, offered him like a one-year, $25 million contract, but it didn't look like the two sides really wanted to make that work. So he's going to Seattle to fill the void of Geno Smith being gone, but a three-year, $100 million contract. So they shipped off DK, shipped off Geno, brought in Sam Darnold, but then they also cut Tyler Lockett. So it's just JSN and what's his name? Bobo, I believe, is the second.
Jake Bobo?
Yeah, Jake Bobo.
They signed Cooper Kupp as well.
And there we go. Sam Darnold said, hey, fellas, I'm not good enough to just have a JSN. I need a Cooper Kupp in here. So this offense is completely different than what we saw last year. I mean, JSN still should be the highlight, but I don't see Sam Darnold repeating and giving us a top, even 14 finish this year.
Yeah, I think in terms of all the landing spots outside of Minnesota, it probably was the best one. He is going in with Clint Kubiak, who he was with for that year at the 49ers, so he's got familiarity in the system. I think on paper is a great move by the Seahawks because Geno wanted more money than they ended up giving to Darnold. So they got younger by about 10 years in bringing in Darnold, and they got a third-round pick on top of it. So on paper, pretty savvy move. This is listed as a three-year, $100 million deal. But if you get into it, it is a little front-loaded. Not all of the details have come out, but there is an out after this year. So if Darnold does not perform to the, you know, standards that they're expecting him to, even though they're saying all the right things and giving all the coach speak, there is a world where they end up moving on next year. I think the most difficult part about this is the long-term argument against Darnold has been that he's seeing ghosts. And the final two games of last year, he was seeing ghosts. And that all became transparent when his offensive line couldn't protect him. When it can, you know, like a lot of quarterbacks, he can succeed. But the Seahawks offensive line is in shambles. And Geno was one of the most pressured players last year. And they haven't done any moves to make that any better. So he's got two, you know, reasonably prolific slot receivers. He's got nobody really stretching the field, but there can only be so much dink and dunk. And if you got a defensive line who can get to him pretty quickly, early and often, then that's where we're going to see potentially the struggle. So I'm assuming they're going to address that, but that's something to watch out for the rest of this offseason and going into the draft.
Clint Kubiak, we saw a lot of motion with him when he was in Seattle, or in the New Orleans Saints offense last year, especially those first few weeks. That New Orleans Saints, everybody was talking about how great that offense was. So I'm sure we're going to see a lot of that. I believe so. They fired their offensive coordinator after the first year, this past year, Seattle did. And they were good offense, too, you know, top 10 in a lot of metrics. And a lot of that seemed to be just they weren't on the same page. They threw it so much. I think they want to run it more. So that also probably is going to play into the fact that we've got two slot receivers here. We're going to run the ball a whole lot, and we're just going to dink and dunk, like you said, toss to these guys just over the line. So I'm excited to see what this offense is. I don't know if I'm exactly excited for fantasy, though.
I'm excited because you and I last year talked about Sam Darnold as somebody to hold in dynasty leagues. And now, you know, he was a backup for several years when we were having these discussions. And now he's probably worth late first, early second, if you wanted to capitalize and you've got some depth there, then that's a pretty good return for somebody who you might have just kept on your bench for a few years.
Grabbed him in like the 18th in a startup. You know, it's madness. So let's talk about the guy. We talked about the guy who's seeing ghosts. Let's go back to the cemetery where he originally saw those ghosts. Let's go to New York and let's talk about a guy who really can't see much of all. This is, I mean, would you call him Ray Charles out there? We've got Justin Fields signing a 2-year, $40 million contract. Folks, we're excited about this. Why? Not for the offense, not for any reason because he's a good quarterback, but because the kid averages 55 yards a game out there. He gives you a fantasy floor, and this has to be a top 12 quarterback this next year. Like, if he's playing the full season, there's no reason he doesn't finish in the top 12.
Yeah, and this is really, you got to, for dynasty and fantasy purposes, you need to take a look at your team and decide what to do here, because if you're a contender, then it's probably good to ride this through. But if I am rebuilding or even considering rebuilding, I'm probably trying to move on from him. I think the NFL has kind of told us what they think of Justin Fields. And really, NFL teams don't let good QBs walk out the door. And we've seen him get traded for a future sixth. So not even a current year sixth, a future sixth to Pittsburgh. And then now signed for what seems like a big contract, but in reality, it's the lowest contract of any QB that's not on a rookie contract. So it's 2 years, $40 million, $30 million guaranteed. Great for Fields. Love the opportunity for him. It does feel like a bridge situation more to me. And it feels like at this time next year, when they only owe him $10 million, that there's really not that much on the line if they decide to move on from him. So if you're, you know, and he was 5-1 or 5-2 or something with the Steelers last year, and they benched him the moment Russell Wilson. So we've just seen numerous teams tell us this guy is not going to be a long-term NFL quarterback. And I'm kind of taking those signs from these teams and saying, if I can move on from him, get a first or something like that, if I'm rebuilding. But he was the QB6 for the first six games last year with Pittsburgh. And for fantasy, he's just a gold mine. So, yeah, take a look at your team, and hopefully this is good for Garrett Wilson. They played together in college, and, you know, he's a first read type of guy. So Garrett Wilson's going to be the first read every single time, and DJ Moore did pretty well with him. So, yeah, I could go on about this forever, but, yeah, fantasy, great. Real life, probably not going to be too long.
Yeah, it's probably a detriment to Breece Hall. He's still young. He's still talented. He's in a contract year, so he's got that incentive to play hard, but I'm nervous about that. Garrett Wilson, I mean, we've only had one fantasy viable receiving option come out of Justin Fields, and it was that DJ Moore season where he finished top 10. Folks, you weren't happy if you had DJ Moore from that season. I know he was a top 10 receiver. You weren't happy, because after the 5 weeks that he was bad, you benched him, and then he blew up for 42 points and then didn't do it again for another three. So, like, it's not going to be fun. It's not going to be pretty unless you just have Justin Fields in this offense. So, this isn't the future for the Jets, that's for sure. Talk about the future, though, for the Commanders. We talked about Jaden Daniels adding a weapon in Deebo Samuel. They also went out and added a left tackle. Laremy Tunsil from the Texans was traded away for a third and a future second. There was a few picks going back and forth a little bit, but four picks in total for Tunsil. And to be frank, like, Texans offensive line was pretty garbage last year. They've traded away three of the five starting offensive linemen here. So let's start on the Commander side here. This is great news for our boy Jane Daniels.
Yeah, great news for everybody on the Commander's offense. This is still one of the best, most productive tackles in the league. And, you know, kind of wish the Patriots had gotten one of those. But Jaden Daniels, you know, another element of protecting him that can only help him in the run game, can only help him in the pass game. That'll apply to Brian Robinson, Austin Eckler, anyone they draft as well. So just another sign of the Commanders kind of using this window to go all in. It'll be an exciting season to watch them.
And then on the Texans side, you know, we've talked about they've already lost three of those pieces. What's your temperature here? At first thought is like, oh my God, this was a bad offensive line and you're losing pieces. That can't be good. Or on the flip side, is we looking at, all right, look, we're not going to sit there and try and make a bad offensive line better. We're going to break it down and rebuild it. I think that's kind of the way I lean right now. I'm excited to see what they can do because last year CJ Stroud needed some help. So fixing this offensive line is how you do that.
Yeah, and I think Caserio is a pretty good GM. Just like
of course you do.
Well, you know, he took a team that was bottom of the barrel and was it they made it to the playoffs like the first year with Stroud. And that was the first year that they really started that rebuild. So kind of a Commanders-esque return. But he's done pretty well. And I read the Laremy Tunsil interview too, and he's handled it all very well and said it's just a business, but they're prioritizing building this team for the future with the younger players. And they had big extensions to Derek Stingley and a couple other players right after that. So I do think this is going to be addressed in the draft, probably a couple veterans. It still makes me nervous if I have any CJ Stroud shares, but I do think that that's the direction that they'll be going.
Yeah, Casero, folks, is the GM for the Texans, came out of New England. So, of course, the resident Patriots fan is going to give him his flowers there a little bit.
My unbiased opinion.
So kind of the biggest news was these last few movements of what we had here. Some smaller pieces, but of course it always means something. The Browns, if you didn't hear, Deshaun Watson re-ruptured his Achilles, probably out for all of 2025, hopefully out for all of 2025. The Browns need to do something else. Clearly that's not the answer, despite him having to be on the roster with his guaranteed money. So they traded for Kenny Pickett for a fifth round pick. We have not seen, I really thought Kirk Cousins was going to make his way to Cleveland. I thought that would have been a great fit, a nice little bridge opportunity if he got cut. But right now I'm seeing them mocked to Travis Hunter at two or Abdul Carter possibly at two. So if they don't take a rookie quarterback here, they have to address it, right? There's no way they're going in with Kenny Pickett and some Maj Podge, are they?
I'd be shocked. I still think Cousins is on the table. I think closer to the draft, we might see a situation with that. If you've got Pickett, he's worth a hold. He's another guy who's just bouncing around the league. He was up with the Eagles last year. Maybe Stefanski can get something out of him, but I can't imagine that this is the plan for the future. This feels more like they upgraded a little bit. They sent Dorian Thompson Robinson to the Eagles and included a fifth. They knew that he has nothing left in the tank to show them. So they kind of just upgraded. I think they kind of just wanted a better backup and maybe somebody they can develop a little bit more. But I do not anticipate this being the plan going into the season, especially when you're locking up Myles Garrett and you're making these other moves that show that you're still trying to compete. Then bringing in Kenny Pickett isn't going to be the answer.
Yeah, I thought they were going to take Abdul Carter at two and then trade Myles Garrett mid-draft, you know, get the replacement, trade him. Nope, they signed him to that $40 million a year contract, really pushed the pressure on a few other teams to get some signings done. Let's talk about some other backup quarterbacks. Let's talk about the Colts just really quickly because my heart hurts just even thinking about this. Daniel Jones is going here inevitably because he wants to compete for a job, and it looks like he probably thinks Anthony Richardson gives him his best chance at having a starting role. I absolutely hate this. I absolutely hate this as a Colts fan. One, because Richardson's going to have the shortest leash. All it's going to take is one game where he finishes barely over 50%, and we're going to hear callings for Daniel Jones. And if and when Daniel Jones goes in there, the worst thing that could ever happen is he goes in there and plays well, because then we don't get a good draft pick and we can't replace either one of them. So,
or you could extend him.
Oh, don't say that.
Look towards the future.
Goodness. So, yeah, the Colts are in a very small window of actually having a win-win. The best case scenario is for Anthony Richardson to be good, I think, at this point, or for him to play every single game and get us to that first overall pick next year. So
you just said there's a few guys who have shown us that when you leave New York, good things happen.
I don't want that to happen here. Oh, goodness. I think he's competent. I think if Anthony Richardson gets hurt and Daniel Jones plugs in, I still think the team will be competitive. And I think he'll be a play in fantasy as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think the hate has grown very strong on Daniel Jones. And I don't know. He's not great, but I don't know if it's as warranted as it needs to be. He just performed at the right time and got the contract in the 1 year he showed that he was a competent quarterback.
I mean, look at Kenny Golladay. I mean, it's not often where guys go off in that last year of the contract and the Giants bite on it, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So this team, I want to talk about the Chargers here. So freaking excited to talk about the Chargers coming into the free agency year. I was like, they're going to make a move for one of these wide receivers. They're going to get one in free agency. They're going to make a trade. Hey, maybe they're going to go big and get a tight end or something. Wrong. What do we do? What are we talking about here, folks? We're talking about Najee Harris going to the Chargers. Incentives could get him to possibly $9 million, but this is like a $5 million deal is what Najee got. I'm excited in the fact that, like, you got a low-end RB2 here, a nice touchdown over on some betting markets, but, like, what do we really have with Najee and the Chargers?
I think you got a guy who has never missed a game, who Greg Roman has played against consistently for years when he was with Baltimore, and I think they see him, obviously, as a good replacement for Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins, even though Dobbins had a pretty good year. What I see this as is a lesser version of probably what the Lions have been doing. And what I'm imagining is first or second round, bringing in somebody a little bit more dynamic as a pass catching back. And Najee's probably taking on a little bit more of the goal line role and a little bit more of the thumper. But if somebody like Travion Henderson goes there and you've got that 1-2 punch that the Lions have with Gibbs and Montgomery, you know, this isn't a long-term signing by any means, but I do think they want to establish the run game. Najee's been a model of health and consistency. I think he's one of the only running backs the last like 3 or 4 years to get 1,000 yards. He kind of just keeps
all four seasons.
He just keeps chugging away, and he doesn't really get much credit for it. And he's getting hit behind the line every time. He's got nobody really like threatening to throw the ball downfield or not stack the box against him. So he's also a pretty competent pass catcher. A few years ago, he had a really good receiving year and they kind of just removed him from that role. Arthur Smith has a tendency to take away people's skill sets, like not allowing Justin Fields to run, not allowing Najee to catch the ball. Like, I don't really know what he's doing, but yeah, I don't know. I think zero running back next year. This would be a top target for me as somebody who could fall into the end zone 10 times, but maybe not have too many high yardage games.
Yeah, he's a very, very unsexy RB2. But that's what he's been his whole career outside of his rookie year where he had Big Ben dropping it from, 2 yards out every single time.
But now he's with Justin Herbert. So now he's got somebody to, like, take the defense back a little bit, make them sit back in his zone, not just 2 years ago. You could watch the Steelers and they were just stacking 9 people up there, and first and second down, they would run up the middle every time. And then they'd just be in third and long. It was like the most predictable stale offense you could ever imagine. And he still made it to 1,000 yards. So yeah, it's unsexy, but he will be a late round running back target for me in redraft leagues for sure.
And this will also be year 2 in the system of the Greg Roman offense here in LA. So we usually see a bigger step happen when we get a little bit more of that cohesion between head coach, OC, and quarterback But hey, folks, I was dogging him. You know, I said, oh, Najee's all we have. That's the unsexy pick. Don't worry. We fixed that wide receiver room. We lost Josh Palmer. We lost him. So we went ahead and brought back a highlight name, a big guy, a first round wide receiver. We brought Mike Williams back on a 1-year, $6 million deal. Look, he's a big guy. He's red zone target, but I think that's about as that's all I've got to say on him.
Yep, I'm good.
Yep. D-Hop signs a 1-year deal with Baltimore. You can see that coming. They like to sign old guys that really don't do a whole lot.
Let's talk about your boy.
Yeah, let's talk about – look, folks, the writing was on the wall. We were excited in January. I was like, January, look at that money. Look at that money. Evan Engram is owed. Jacksonville, it's time to move on. Brenton Strain looks pretty freaking good from Penn State, the second-round player. Let's get it going. Let's send Evan Engram out there. Let's see him just excel again with his next team, like he did when he left the Giants. Where is he going to go visit? He's going to visit the Chargers and go there, right, folks? No, I actually think he went to a better spot. The only spot that I think was better than the Chargers. Evan Engram, cut by the Jacksonville Jaguars to go to Denver. 2-year, $23 million deal. Did Sean Payton just find his Joker?
I wouldn't say he's like a Taysom Hill, but I would say that this is a great fit for the Broncos, for Sean Payton, for Bo Nix. I think this is a fantastic signing. I would have been happy with the Chargers or the Broncos. Bo Nix obviously exceeded all expectations last year, and now he's got an extremely competent tight end. We know Sean Payton has a long history of loving his tight ends. Engram, just like Christian Kirk, both shoulder injuries that took him out, so you don't have to worry about them losing speed or anything. They should be healthy for this year. So I think this is a kind of in that range 7 to 11 tight end who could surpass those expectations next year if you decide to wait and not go with one of the elite guys. But he was number 2 or 3 two seasons ago, and he could certainly make his way back up to that if he stays healthy this year.
Yeah, back-to-back top 6 finishes for him in his first 2 years in Jacksonville. ADP was tight end 16 just a week ago. He is already up to tight end 13 in underdog best ball. So I don't think he's going to be a discount. I think he's probably going to be about appropriately owned. But, I mean, when Sean Payton says he's happy with his wide receiver room with an aging Cortland Sutton and some questionable rookies, I think this is a nice piece that you can get a consistent I would imagine he's going to see a 20% target share in this offense. So very excited for Evan Engram this year. Alrighty. So leaving Denver is Javonte Williams, headed off to sign not a big contract, very tiny contract, $3.5 million going to Dallas, as well as Miles Sanders here. So are we writing off them taking a top end running back? Is Jentzy probably not on Dallas's board with these signings?
I don't want to rule it out. I think there have been rumblings that because of the depth of the class, that they're willing to wait until round 2. If they view that all as one big tier, then maybe that's something they'll do. They do definitely have other holes, but I don't hate these signings. Javonte and Miles Sanders, both on 1-year cheap deals. That's kind of the way the league went for a long time, was taking some more veteran running backs and giving them cheap deals. And Javonte, you know, 2-3 years ago, this was the RB1 in Dynasty until he had that brutal knee injury. So taking a shot on him, Miles Sanders, and adding a top running back would be a pretty solid running back room that I would be happy with if I was in Dallas, especially with the amount of money that's been allotted to it compared to some of the other teams.
Yeah, I was really excited for Javonte Williams. I really thought he was going to get traded midway last year to Dallas. You know,
I said the same thing. I was like, why not trade for somebody who can help you out here? And Dowdle did outperform my expectations. Same. He's probably worth saying. Dowdle 1 year with the Panthers too. I don't think we have him on this list, but a little bit of a 1-2 with Chuba Hubbard.
Yeah, I was hoping Chuba would go unscathed, and they really, I mean, not that they put a whole lot of money on him, but Chuba, I'm pretty excited for. Dallas, I mean, they probably would have traded for Javonte had they not given up their 4th-round pick for Jonathan Mingo from the Panthers already. So,
or their previous 4th-round pick for Trey Lance. Oh, so, my
God. When do we get to talk about Trey Lance's signing,
folks? They do not value 4th-round picks whatsoever.
I should give them to the Rams. They they dunk on those fourth and fifth rounders all day.
I know they do.
I mean, we talked about Rodgers a little bit. He got cut. I wanted so bad for the Brett Favre storyline to be complete and him go to the Vikings. I think he wants to go to the Vikings. Vikings don't seem to want him. They've turned down trade offers for J.J. McCarthy, and they've kind of said they're not really pursuing Aaron Rodgers. So it looks like the Giants and the Steelers are the last two teams that could really take him.
Yeah, supposedly mulling retirement as well. So if anyone can make this more drawn out and dramatic, then we can count on Aaron to do so. Although it sounds like the Vikings were more at fault in this instance, but still, it just kind of follows him around.
He loves the drama. Like, what's going to happen when he's off TV? Poor guy.
He'll be following Brady's footsteps as like a Fox newscaster.
Last piece of news. I just want to bring it up because it's noteworthy, of course, but it's funny. It's really funny because you see Joe Burrow out there slinging it last year, trying his hardest. I think they had like one of those weird stats where like the most one score losses for a team to like lose the most. Like they scored so many points to not make the playoffs. So many points, so close in these games. And yet this defense just could not get it done. So what did they do, folks? They took all of their money and they said, we're going to ship away our best defender, not spend any money on the defense, and put it all on the offense. Joe Burrow, $55 million a year. We're going to sign Mike Gesicki to a nice three-year, $25 million deal.
That's where my anger lies. Sorry, go ahead.
Exactly, because they signed Gesicki first before these wide receivers. So I'm like, oh, Higgins. He got tagged, but I'm like, Higgins is going to get traded. No, they signed Gesicki. Then they signed both the receivers. Four-year, $115 million for Higgins. Four-year, $161 million for Chase. Folks, they are paying these two receivers $20 million a year, more than they would have to had they paid them back in August.
Yeah, and I believe it was the GM came out earlier this offseason and said Chase will be the highest paid non-quarterback in this league. And then it took them so long to go through the process that two other players became the highest paid non-quarterback, and it cost them like an extra $10 million in the end because they waited. And if they had gone to last year before the cap increased, I don't know what this team is doing. Chase is obviously elite. Higgins is better than people think. Higgins was, I think, top five or six rated PFF receiver last year. And points per game, he was three overall. So it was Chase, Justin Jefferson, and Higgins when he was on the field. These are two incredible receivers. Joe Burrow wanted them to stay. But they can't stop anything. And if you go back and watch the Commanders game early in Jaden Daniels' career, he just picked them apart as this like young rookie, just like targeting Zach Ertz in the middle of the field over and over and over. And it became like a laughingstock. I couldn't even watch it anymore. It was just pathetic. And then they don't make the playoffs because of it. And they won't.
Yeah. Lost to the Patriots last year, folks. Had they not lost to the Patriots, they would have made the freaking playoff and the Patriots would have the number one overall pick. But because of that, oh man, I loved that game.
What I can say is Chase Higgins, Chase Brown, you know, everyone on this offense, any pass catching ability is going to be a fantasy gold mine next year, because just like this year, they need to put up 40 points every single game to even have a chance of winning. So at the end of every game, Burrow is going to be throwing, you know, 40, 45 passes as an average against any competent other offense on the other side of the field. So these guys are all going to be worthy of, you know, Chase being the number one pick and Higgins probably second, third round somewhere in there as well. So yeah, keep an eye out on these guys and draft your Bengals.
Yeah, they're probably going to draft nothing but defensive players, so which makes me feel pretty good about Chase Brown. I figured they were going to add some sort of competition back there, but
they did.
They added
Samaje Perine.
That's right. So yeah,
I'm just kidding. He's not competition. Did they not? Chase Brown. They did add him, but he's long gone in comparison to what Chase Brown brings to the table.
For sure. So yeah, hopefully they don't draft a rookie to ruin his, because I am excited about him and the wide receivers. Gesicki, I have no interest in. Absolutely. Unless Higgins is hurt. Gesicki,
yeah, we didn't even touch on that. So Higgins and Chase, you want to pay them, fine. You got to keep Burrow happy. But Gesicki is replaceable. And this is a good tight end class. save your $25 million. It's not like an outrageous thing contract, but apply something to the defense. Don't trade away all, you know, one, was it Sam Hubbard retired? And then
Trey Hendrickson is on the
is getting traded. So it's like, you already weren't good. And these are basically your two best players. You got to find some wiggle room within there. And someone like Gesicki on most teams would be that guy, but not here. You know, Gesicki, probably a good best ball guy again.
Goodness. Absolutely wild stuff. Folks, we are going to be coming at you weekly to make sure we keep you up to date with all of the continued movements, whether it be free agency, whether it be the draft, whether it be just rookie knowledge here. We're going to be diving in deep, going into a different subject each week. So whether you're playing Dynasty or Redraft, we're going to touch on a little bit of both. Nick, until we get back next time, where can the folks find you and all the great things you do?
Dude, you can't find me anywhere. I have no social media. And if you have any, you know, comments, send them to @too_much_Brian, it looks like. So yeah, I'm here for the fun of it and to give you all something to listen to on your way to work. And I love fantasy and ready to talk some dynasty and stuff as well. But yeah, don't come looking for me.
That's right, folks. There's the map. It's nailed to the bottom of the tree. You've got to move the rock counterclockwise 2 times. And that's how you get the path to find Nick. Drop some stuff in the comments. Let them know here if you got anything for them. But yeah, I am @too_much_Brian on Twitter, @too_much_Brian everywhere else. If you're looking for more work of mine, it's Too Much Fantasy Football over on the YouTube and the other podcast stuff. But folks, we got to get out of here. We're shutting it down. They're throwing the lights at us. We got to get it done. Any closing marks for the people there, Nick?
No, thank you guys for being here. Looking forward to starting this back up. And yeah, do ask questions in the comments. We'll be happy to get back to you.
Absolutely, folks. We'll see y'all next time. Have fun. Thanks for listening.